And I will call to order this regular session of the Springfield Planning Commission, April 4th, 2017. We will begin this evening. If you'll all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any adjustments to the session or agenda tonight? Staff? Hearing none? This is the time that the Planning Commission has set aside for public testimony not related to the quasi-judicial hearing that we will be conducting subsequently. Do we have any requests for to address the Planning Commission? None? Okay. All right. This evening we have, we'll be conducting a quasi-judicial hearing. This is a request for Metro Plan diagram amendment and zone change for 3.35 acre property on the 1900 block of 5th Street, north of Fred Meyer, case TYP 417-00002 and TYP 317-00004. We'll begin with legal counsel talking to us about the explanation of a quasi-judicial hearing process.
The hearing tonight is characterized as a quasi-judicial hearing. Quasi-judicial means that certain due process procedural rights are associated with this decision-making process. These rights include the rights to notice, to present evidence, to have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision-maker. The primary purpose of the hearing is to establish a record upon which a decision can be made. The evidentiary rules associated with these hearings are less restrictive than used in circuit courts, and all relevant testimony, including hearsay, may be considered. It is important to note that you must raise procedural and substantive issues at this hearing or later in front of the City Council, or you will be prohibited from raising those issues subsequently on appeal before the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. A person who raises an issue must support raising the issue with statements or evidence that is sufficiently specific that the Planning Commission has an opportunity to respond to the concern or the issue. If you are the applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed conditions of approval to preserve your right to appeal or seek damages in circuit court. Failure to raise constitutional or other issues relating to the proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the Planning Commission or City Council to respond precludes an action for damages in circuit court. The burden of proof in a quasi-judicial decision-making process is on the applicant to show by preponderance of the evidence that all of the applicable approval criteria have been met. Those criteria for tonight's decision are posted on the wall behind the Planning Commission and are outlined in the staff report and will be summarized by the staff in their presentation. The record in this matter consists of the application and any supporting information, any staff report and supporting documents, and any testimony and documentary evidence that is admitted during this hearing. If you want an item, in addition to documents received by the city prior to this hearing that are already in the record, if you want an item entered into the record, present that item to the planning secretary, who will be seated over here across from me. If there's any question in your mind whether any material is in the record, please make a point of asking that it be accepted into the record. By statute, you have a right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You do not have to give a reason for the request, but you must make that request before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record may be held open for an additional period of time to allow other parties, to allow the applicant an opportunity to respond to the new evidence. You also have the right to request a continuance of tonight's hearing. A continuance is discretionary with the Planning Commission. The party requesting it must show that prejudice to his or her rights will not be cured by merely holding the record open. This hearing is recorded on tape, so I ask that those who wish to testify follow a few procedures. First, please testify from the podium to my left, not from the citizen's seats. Second, Begin your testimony by stating your name and your address for the record. This enables the Planning Secretary and the Planning Commission to identify the testimony offered by each speaker and will assist in creating a transcript of tonight's hearing if that is necessary. Finally, if you would like a copy of the written decision, please provide your name and address to the Planning Secretary. The Planning Commission tonight will issue a recommendation to the City Council on this matter after the record is closed. The City Council will later have an additional public hearing and will make a final written decision. After tonight's hearing, after the Planning Commission's recommendation, the decision by the City Council is final, and any person who participated in the hearing may appeal the Council's decision to the Land Use Board of Appeals. If you are interested in appealing, you should consult an attorney regarding the deadline for the appeal and the form of the appeal. Oregon land use law requires that the Planning Commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to this matter and allow any person to challenge the Planning Commission for bias. Generally, a conflict of interest involves a situation where the decision maker, his or her family, or their business would benefit or suffer by his or her decision. An ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. Commissioner, at this time it is appropriate to open the hearing.
Okay. The hearing is now open. And at this time, I'll ask commissioners to declare any potential conflicts of interest. Do we have any conflicts of interest?
I have none.
No.
And any ex parte communication?
None.
Okay, I would state that at 4:02 p.m. Today, the Planning Commission did receive a communication, an email from Tom Hinkle, and that information will be entered into the public record.
And if you could provide just a brief summary of what that information is.
Summary of the information is just related to the changes requested. This is a resident that lives in the area and discussing some negative potential effects.
Okay. Oh. So we will provide a copy of that to the applicant as well. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. At this time, we will move into the staff report. So, Jim Donovan.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Jim Donovan for Mr. Lindbergh tonight. We have a 10-item staff report, and I will try to summarize staff's portion of that. The other attachments will be discussed and are included for your reference, along with the testimony from the public tonight. I'm trying to reach a recommendation. I guess for the record, I will enter the staff report into the record. I will also note that staff did also receive today a handwritten letter from a resident on T Street as well, and it states concerns about the proposed map amendment and rezone, and I will provide a copy for the commission now. To begin, I think at the outset, we probably use a few of the pictures, and I would like to identify for the record the tax lots involved, their location relative to the other properties, and their zoning. So with the use of the monitors behind you as well, I should start by saying we're at roughly 50 Q Street in the city of Springfield. And the context of the site is it's just north of the Fred Meyer Shopping Center, and it abuts residential, it's currently residentially zoned and designated property abutting residential property to the north and to the east and across the street, a mix of zoning. This is the context from the Metro Plan, just to show that it is designated commercial along Fifth Street for the shopping center and residential in the surrounding. Here you see the current zoning for the tax lots, and to be specific, one time. Those include two parcels comprising 1.78 acres, lots 4,600 and 5,000. From low density, this is the LDR property to medium density residential. So those properties are the long horizontal lot and the lot to the east or to the right of the picture. And change the plan designation for four parcels containing 1.57 acres. Those being tax lot 4601, 4700, 4800, and 4900 from LDR to high density residential. And those are the darker or orange colored properties. Immediately adjacent to the Fred Meyer Shopping Center. I will not repeat the city attorney's descriptions of the process, but in terms of the record, I would like to note that we did comply with the criteria of approval, the standards for notification for this procedure. We did post a notice in the Register Guard newspaper in time for this proceeding. We did send out mail notice. We have received public comments. The public are here and will address their concerns. And in addition to those comments, there is one response to a comment regarding that notice, which is contained in your packet at attachment number 7 from the city attorney, concluding that said notice was adequate and met legal standards. So we may touch on that as we move forward. Beginning with the criteria at 5.14-135 over your shoulder to the left and in your staff report, the first test this evening is consistency of the statewide planning goals. And there are 19 planning goals. And in terms of plan or map amendments of this nature, 13 are deemed applicable, albeit somewhat general in some instances, but some are germane to the issue, and I'll spend just a little bit of time on those. Beginning in your staff report at page 3 of 15, goal 1, citizen involvement. The shorthand kind of takeaway test here for considering statewide land use goals is, in short, does the proposal follow the adopted Metro Plan and implementing ordinance standards, those being the development code, and does the proposal affect directly impact our implementation of our acknowledged comprehensive plan and implementing ordinance. So with regard, that being said, with regard to citizen involvement, as I just mentioned, we did post the notice required by the Springfield Development Code, and we did follow all of the standards for this procedure, such that the intent of the policy statement at goal 1 as adopted in our Metro Plan has been met. At goal 2 for land use planning, at the risk of being redundant, again, the Springfield Development Code lays out the process and the procedure that we've put forth tonight for this process. We're here for this type 1 Metro Plan diagram amendment, and it follows a type 4 land use application process, and we have a legislative hearing following a quasi-judicial structure for the execution of this testimony, and it will culminate in a recommendation to the City Council following those stated procedures. Being brief at Goal 3, agricultural land, there's nothing being directly impacting our compliance with this goal. Similarly, with forest lands, that is in shorthand not affected or not applicable. With regard to natural resources, staff did conclude that this did not affect our compliance with Goal 5. The points that are typically reviewed are we impacting natural resources like wetlands? Are we addressing scenic and historic areas or open spaces? And open spaces, of course, is addressed at the metro plan level by the provision of parks and open space, and this doesn't directly affect any of the surrounding parks or resources under the control of the land lane. So here we found that it was consistent with our adopted metro plan under the goals. With regard to Goal 6, air, water, land, resources, quality, similar, the action does not alter the city's acknowledged compliance with Goal 6. With regard to Goal 7, natural hazards, this is typically hillside and floodplain protections, inventories, etc., and there are none of those affecting this site in particular. We found no impact with Goal 7. Recreational needs, this was met again by the implementation and adoption of Willam Lane's master plan and the services they provide. Economic development, this particular redesignation and rezoning of the property from low-density residential to medium and high-density will not affect the amount of employment land within the city's inventory. This is again subject to the residential policies as adopted in the metro plan and then subsequently in the residential element adopted in 2011. That task is typically germane to commercial industrial lands, and this has no impact on those inventories. With regard to Goal 10, housing, the total size of the proposed amendments is 3.35 acres, and the staff report does address at page 8 of attachment 1 the current status of those inventories that were used during the adoption of the residential element. And briefly, that housing element did identify a surplus of approximately 378 gross acres of LDR land, a surplus of approximately 76 gross acres of MDR, and a deficit of approximately 28 acres of HDR designation at that time in 2011. And you may have read findings talking about the offsets, the impacts of this, and using different numbers, and I'll let the applicant address their use of the numbers. But suffice to say that it is sort of a moving target. Now, those were the numbers in 2011. As we undertake changes of this nature, they're usually relatively minor, either city or applicant initiated. Again, in this case, we're talking about 3.35 acres. A minor change to the slight inventory surplus of MDR, and a minor change to what was a deficit in 2011 for the HDR. The to be completely accurate, the element in inventory did also note that there was some adoption of residential lands in the Glenwood area. However, that is very focused and limited to the Glenwood area, and the nature of the metro plan, the nature of the amendment process, the code does allow proposals from an applicant of this nature, and it's not precluded by those numbers. So our charge here tonight is to present the information germane to the criteria and make a decision on what's before us tonight. With regard to Goal 11, Public Facilities and Services, I think it's in the Zoning Staff Report, we will address some of the context of the public infrastructure. There's no major impact to this element as proposed, and as discussed, the area is somewhat mature, developed in terms of public infrastructure and all of the necessary facilities to service this site, regardless of what type of LDR development it was, are in place. So there is no impact to the public facilities and services element. With Goal 12, transportation, there is a test in our criteria under the zoning that we will address later. There's no major impact to the transportation system plan as it relates to the metro plan or the residential element. Again, the streets and the public infrastructure are highly developed in the area, and there was no impact. Similarly, at energy conservation and urbanization, there is no impact, bringing us to the Willamette Greenway, which is clearly not applicable given the location. And goals 16 through 19 are the estuary, the coastal, and the beaches and dunes, and ocean resources. With that said, staff did find a basis for compliance with the statewide planning goals. With regard to the second criteria for the Metro Plan Amendment, it is plan inconsistency. In the cases where the Metro Plan applies, we shall not make that internally inconsistent. In those cases where the residential element applies, we shall not be inconsistent with that comprehensive plan. So again, this is just one more time to state that we're using the Metro Plan where it may be specific or applicable, and we're using primarily the residential element because it is most direct and applicable. The staff response here is somewhat lengthy. I'd like to summarize probably beginning at the bottom of page 12 or 15 and note that staff has done approximately 10 of the residential housing policy statements and found consistency with those statements. But I think it's worthy to note at finding 26 that on the whole, the Metro Plan as it's written and the city's residential element as contained therein is not designed or intended to remain static and unyielding in its assignment of land use designations, as evidenced that Chapter 4, Policy 7A, allow for property owners to initiate an amendment to the Metro Plan diagram to reflect a change in circumstances or need. This goes back to consistency with those Metro Plan policies and the residential element. It is in the Metro Plan that this is allowed, and therefore we have these criteria before us tonight. So that's just one of the key elements of the Metro Plan and the reason we're here. And I'm not going to go through finding 27 through 35, but they are in the record and in evidence as consistent with numerous policies from the Metro Plan and the residential element. Under that element as well, at page 14 of attachment 1, there is a recitation of the Q Street Refinement Plan policies. The Refinement Plan obviously refines the Metro Plan, as did our housing element, and with regard to those policies, at finding 37 and 38, you can see at 37, A through D, the standards that were applied at the time of the Q Street Refinement Plan adoption and implementation, and they still lend guidance today as to how to locate MDR changes to that plan. And I guess I would point your attention to sub C, that areas that could serve as a buffer between low density residential and community commercial is one of the key criteria for identifying areas to place MDR. And at finding 38, in accordance with the residential criteria of that plan, number three, it provides some guidance for the placement of high density residential designation. And I guess I would submit to you that B through F at that criterion are directly applicable and are met. And insofar as the Q Street Refinement Plan provides us guidance for the ongoing use of that plan and future changes, staff did find that we were consistent with those two plan criteria. That is a summary of the first test as included in your staff report. And at page 15, staff does find adequate basis to find consistency with those criteria. So rather than a recommendation, staff is here as a resource to you as a body, and to the public, and to the applicant. And it's more of a conclusion based on our analysis of the information submitted by the applicant with regard to those criteria. The applicant will undoubtedly address and perhaps be more specific during their presentation, but staff, I guess, concludes again on this particular criterion that there is adequate basis to, for you to find a recommendation of approval.
Thank you. Okay.
If I may.
Yes.
Briefly, because as a refinement plan is modified by the adoption of the Metro Plan Diagram Amendment automatically, I just want to note into the record that there are findings of compliance on the zoning staff report, and it's a separate action, and it will require probably a separate motion and order as evidenced in your packet by the draft order and recommendation. So I did want to call your attention to that. And again, it follows the standard form and content, if you will. The criteria are behind you. The applicant has submitted approximately 15 recitations of Metro Plan policies as they may also apply. And staff at page 5 of 8 offers their findings and reaches the conclusion that is compliant with one condition noted, and that is because of the order of adoption, because of the relationship between the Metro Plan and the zoning plan, the recommended condition of approval at page 6 of 8, which is prior to or concurrent with approval of the zone change, the Metro Plan shall be amended as initiated by planning action 417-002 as before you tonight. So that speaks to the order, the hierarchy of those plan and applications, and the adoption that the council will also follow to that order. So with that noted, I think that concludes staff presentation for now. I'll stand for questions, or we'll move on and I can answer questions after the applicant and the public testimony at the chair's discretion.
I think that's what we'll do. Yes, we'll allow the applicant to step forward, and we certainly will, I'm sure, have some staff questions subsequently.
Thank you.
Okay. Testimony from the applicant.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Rick Satry with Shermer Satry Group, 375 West 4th Avenue, Suite 201 in Eugene. We're speaking tonight as the applicant's representative. I want to thank staff for their assistance in processing these two applications. As staff's recommendation basically is for the Planning Commission to move forward to the City Council a recommendation to approve these two applications. Let's review a few, and in support of their recommendation that you do that, let's review a few highlights out of the staff report. I'll endeavor as best I can to not repeat what Mr. Donovan just shared with you. So briefly, the proposal consists of six contiguous tax lots. I appreciate the fact that Mr. Donovan that particular graphic up on the monitor, because that's probably the most helpful for our conversation this evening. These are located between Q and T Streets in the 1900 block on the east side of Fifth Avenue. Immediately to the south of us, as we can see on the graphic, is a large community commercial plan and zone designation. That's basically where the Fred Meyer Shopping Center is. Across Fifth Street to the west is a mixture of high-density residential, medium-density residential, and then to the northwest, low-density residential. Today, as you have seen in the application materials, the planning and the zoning of the subject property is low-density residential. So everything north of the bright red community commercial on the graphic today is the pale yellow, the LDR designation. One pattern that if you were to look at the larger graphics within the Q Street refinement plan, you would see that on an east-west basis for that whole plan, there is a blending of planning and zoning designations from the more intense to the less intense, i.e. along Q Street, they tended to be commercial designations, often then banded with high-density designations, banded with a medium density, and then ultimately, as we move north into the neighborhood, the low density. So the proposal here, as you see on that graphic, is a similar approach, keeping the high density, the brighter orange color there, closest to the more intense land use of the commercial center, and using the medium density designation as a buffering between the more intense high density and the established low density residential. So let me say that I'm going to speak a little bit about some of the public comment we've received on the record prior to today, but before I get there, I want to make sure that all of us understand that public comment matters, and that this isn't the last bite of the apple for this particular proposal. You know that. All of us need to remind ourselves of that. There are at least two more bites at the apple, if you'll allow us to use that phrase. One is that your recommendation moving forward from here goes to the City Council. Brand new public hearing, there'll be public notice, there'll be a staff report. So there's a second opportunity for all of us to weigh in should we choose to when it does reach the City Council in the near future. And there'll be at least one more opportunity for public notice and public comment beyond that. And that in conformance with the Springfield Development Code, site plan review would be required for any development on this property other than low-density single-family homes. And therefore, the site plan review is public notice, public comment opportunity as well. So should development proceed on this property, there'll be even a second opportunity for public notice and public comment beyond today. So this proposal really is all about housing. Springfield recently adopted an updated urban growth boundary, which you're all very aware of. And they recently adopted the Springfield 2030 Comprehensive Plan, the economic and urbanization elements, which you're aware of. And not too long ago, the Springfield adopted its Springfield Comprehensive Plan, the residential land use and housing element. And that particular element is important, and because these applications before you are about residential land use and housing. So, as Mr. Donovan shared with you, Beyond the obvious, well, not beyond the obvious, but beyond the staff report citations that the application is in compliance with state land use goals, as Mr. Donovan shared with you, beginning on page 13 of attachment one, there are a number of citations directly from Springfield's residential land use and housing element that are particularly applicable to this request and particularly demonstrate compliance with criteria. And as you know, that the Springfield Comprehensive Plan policies do take precedence over the Metro Plan policies in this regard. So let me summarize what some of those say on page 13 in your packet. Number one, the city shall support locating high-density residential development and increasing the density of development near employment or commercial centers, which is what this proposal chooses to do. It'll encourage and facilitate development of more attached and clustered housing types within the low-density and medium-density districts. It will seek ways to introduce a variety of housing options for all income levels. It will promote housing development and affordability and proximity to transit stations. Fifth Avenue is a transit route. We're less than a half a mile from other transit stops, in particular the MX transit facility, just a little less than half a mile to the west there at Q and Pioneer Parkway. It will promote the walkability and convenient access of housing, linking housing to transit, linking housing to commercial, and it'll enhance the quality and affordability of neighborhood infill development and multifamily development. So those speaking specifically in your adopted residential land use and housing element in support of this proposal. As Mr. Donovan said also the following page on page 14 of attachment one, there are two specific Q Street refinement plan policies that that apply directly to this proposal. First one is criteria number two there on page 14 that states that medium density residential designations shall be applied where the following occur. Areas adjacent to medium density residential, which we are, we're adjacent to it just across the street. Areas that could serve as a buffer between commercial and low density residential areas, which this does. Areas that are in within 1/2 mile of a transit station, as we said a minute ago, we are. Residential criteria number three out of the Q Street Refinement Plan also supports this request. In as follows. One, areas adjacent to high density residential, which we are. Areas that are within 1/2 mile of community commercial areas, which we are. Areas within 1/2 mile of a transit station. And areas within 1/4 mile of an arterial or collector. Well, Fifth Street is a collector, so is Q Street. Now, as I mentioned a minute ago, public comment does matter. And the comments that the applicant had an opportunity to review, comments received prior to today, we understand that at least a couple of comments were received this afternoon. We have not had a chance to review those until just a moment ago, but the ones that we had a chance to review prior today, we want to be clear that the bulk of the comments received, that, again, public comment is important to all of us, but the bulk of those comments received are not applicable criteria regarding the two applications before you. Nonetheless, they're important. And it's important for all of us to remember that these concerns expressed by the neighbors, legitimate concerns, are part and parcel with the site plan review process that will come up subsequent to this planning and zoning process. Briefly, here are some of the things that have been cited in the public comment. Solar access. As noted in the staff report, this parcel is large enough that the solar access standards, when they become applicable in site review, will be applicable and will be able to be complied with. There are other concerns regarding fencing and privacy, landscape buffering, setbacks, building heights. Let me share a little bit about, again, all of these will have an opportunity, the neighbors will have an opportunity to look at a specific proposal, comment on a specific proposal regarding these attributes during the site plan review process. Let me note, for example, just with respect to setbacks, in the low-density residential zone, which this property currently is, there was some concern about how close buildings might be to their backyards. Well, in the existing low-density residential standard, a side yard only needs to be 5 feet wide, backyard 10 feet wide. And in the low-density district, a building can be 30 feet tall. So you can imagine in the existing zoning, if you're concerned about the future, and today, if that property were redeveloped with low-density residential development, you could have a 30-foot tall building 5 feet from your backyard. Now, what's interesting is that in the site review standards, because the multifamily standard component within the site review standards is that when MDR buffers or is adjacent to LDR, that 5 foot side yard standard and that back in that 30-foot backyard standard become 25 feet. So there will be a much greater setback with multifamily development than there would be with low density development. Just an FYI for all of us, when we get to the site review process, we can take a look at that in more detail. So, wrapping up here, applicable criteria regarding this evening. As Mr. Donovan said, you have two applications before you. There's two separate motions, two separate recommendations to move forward to the council, which will make two separate decisions when it reaches their table. Number one, with respect to the Metro Plan Diagram Amendment, we are consistent with the applicable statewide planning goals as noted in your staff report and as summarized by Mr. Donovan. This does not make the Metro Plan internally inconsistent. And we are consistent with the Springfield Comprehensive Plan, in particular, page 14 of attachment 1, the number of citations from your recently adopted residential land use and housing element. With respect to the zone change request, we are consistent with applicable plans and policies. There are adequate public facilities and services adjacent to and to the property. And we are in compliance with the Springfield Development Code and the Oregon Administrative Rules. So in closing, for the moment, we'll be back up under rebuttal if the need arises. In closing, we'd like to say that staff finds that the proposed Metro Plan Diagram Amendment and the zone change from LDR to a combination of MDR and HDR is consistent with applicable criteria. Staff is recommending that the Planning Commission consider moving forward a favorable recommendation to the City Council. As Mr. Donovan noted, in the Metro Plan itself, it states that plans are not meant to be static, fixed objects, but they are meant to be flexible and respond to changes over time. And so we're right there in the ballpark with respect to that intent. And lastly, a quick reminder is that there are at least two more bites at the apple for all of us with this particular property. One, the City Council public hearing regarding these two applications. Secondarily, the site plan review process. We are available for questions. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Any questions at the moment?
I have one. As I look at the parcel designation map, the access strip does not appear to be addressed. It's not on this map, it's on your actual assessment map. So there's like a 20-foot access strip that's north of lots 4700 and 4800.
Excellent question. If you're wondering about that, what about that? Well, it's a narrow, unimproved, substandard piece of public right-of-way. It is public right-of-way. Never been improved. It's irrelevant with respect to these two applications because the right-of-ways aren't planned and zoned. It just happens to be there. So moving forward through a site plan review process, the decision will be made at that time about what to do with it. Some of the options would be to vacate it since it's unimproved and doesn't go anywhere. Another option might be to improve it to full width with a cul-de-sac or something of that nature. That decision would be part of the site review process.
I hadn't seen it addressed, and I also noted that there are utilities, I guess they'd be easemented.
Yes, there is a bit of public sanitary sewer facility in that unimproved right-of-way. And again, the decision about what to do about that would be made as part of the site review process.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Greg.
Okay, at this time, we have public testimony. Our first opportunity is any testimony in support. Hearing none. We have testimony opposed to the application. We have a few requests. And I would just remind our public that we have a 3-minute time frame. We have several folks that wish to speak to the Planning Commission tonight. I will ask Commissioner Puebla to be our timekeeper for this process. And I would, when you come up to address the Planning Commission, please state your name and address. If Tom Hinkle would please step forward.
Yes, I'm Tom Hinkle. I live at 1980 Fifth Street. I'm the person who submitted a statement opposed to this zoning plan. I've only been really working on this for about 2 days, but in looking at it, I can see that there's a lot of impact on the neighborhood that I think will not be good in any way. I hear the lawyer that was just speaking here, Mr. Sartre, I guess his name, talking about planning goals, about consistency with criteria. That may be well and good. It may be consistent with the criteria to change the zoning. But my question is it something that is actually going to be good for the community? One of my main issues is I go to the planning department, I say, what are the plans for this project? We don't know. We're supposed to, the people proposing say we have 3 bites of the apple. Just the first bite, but the first bite is changing the zoning. Once that's established, who knows what we're going to get? So from my perspective, we need, if this community and the council does not have a site plan and what their intent doing here, how can you give a zoning change? a few other things, if you would look at my the document I submitted today, I looked at this. I assume that what we're building here is apartments. Everyone talks about apartments. Question: What apartments are we going to get? What kind? And if you go down on Fifth Street, the original zoning and the intended zoning was to put the medium and low, the medium and the high density on the west side of Fifth Street. Now we're moving it to the east side, and the people that came and built, and bought houses with the intent of staying there, they knew what that zoning was. They expected it to go on into the future. Okay, now what are they going to get? We don't know. And what is the impact of if we have apartments, what kind are they going to be? Are they going to be really low rent, like what's down on Fifth Street? How will that impact the community? So those are primarily my issues. And if you would carefully look at the information I submitted, I appreciate it. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate the testimony. Okay, next, Nancy, and you'll have to help me with the last name. Is it starts with an L, maybe?
Aarons?
Cans?
Aarons?
Yes, Aarons. Is it E-A-R?
A-R-E-N-S.
A-R-E-N-S. Your Y on your Nancy kind of...
I'm sloppy.
Looks like a, looks like a first letter on another, on your last name.
Good evening.
Nancy, yes, and your address, please.
Nancy Aarons, 607 T Street. I love the area. It's quiet. It's zoned for low density. And I'm worried about safety, crime. The apartments they just built, high density, across the street, there is a big difference in traffic. I mean, it's hard to pull out and turn left. I do not want people looking in my backyard. That's a safety issue, too. I love it there. I don't know why they can't have low-density housing along T, single level along T and 7th Street, and then facing Fred Meyer's, they can have higher one apartments. It's a good neighborhood, and we were expecting it to stay low-density. So, thank you.
Okay, Sue Stoneburner. Name and address, please.
Sue Stoneburner, 629 T Street. I purchased my house about 9 years ago, knowing that I knew, I'm not naive enough to know that they wouldn't put something right behind me. I understand that. I think probably it's a better idea than having an empty lot. But I also built a quite nice sunroom that if there's a two-story apartment of any kind behind me, it's going to look right straight into my sunroom and into my dining room, and I am concerned about my privacy, very concerned about it. I was hoping that I would live in this area, that area, for the rest of my life. And feel safe there. It's harder to feel safe because there is a lot of crime in our area, as there is in many places in the Springfield, Eugene area. But privacy is probably my biggest concern. I think that, changing the zoning to medium to high, it's just it could be anything, and we know nothing. I guess maybe if I had a better idea of what the plan was, I might feel a little bit better about this whole rezoning thing, but it's so up in the air. I just am very uncomfortable with it. I'm uncomfortable with, is there going to be enough police force in that whole area? I mean, everywhere. I mean, I'm in my backyard, I hear sirens all the time. We have had a big crime in that area. I'm concerned because what we do on T Street, all of us have really worked hard to maintain our yards, and we're proud of that area and proud of what they are. When I look across the street on the east side of Fifth, I don't see that so well. I mean, the apartments that they have built there in the last few months, they're already looking like they've been there for several years. And there's a lot of people and kids in the area. It's just adding a lot, traffic-wise, crime-wise. So that's my concerns.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This evening. Okay, Gloria Parrish. Hold on a second.
Bear with me, I've never done anything like this before,
no problem,
so this is frightening to me.
Name and address so it's in the public record, if you would.
Gloria Parrish at 606 T Street.
Excellent.
I'm a homeowner of a tandem home, and I bought it about 5 years ago. I bought in that area because it was single family dwelling, and there were duplexes and various things like that, and all of the building apartments were on the east or the west side of 5th Street. So so I was not concerned about things coming my direction. Oh, about, I suppose it was 3 years into owning the house, we had something okayed. It's called Riverstone down the street from T Street. The neighborhood, I was never notified of that being built there, and it certainly impacted our neighborhood and continues to impact our neighborhood with additional traffic, people speeding down the street. When they were building, there was so much construction, large construction going up and down the street. The noise level had increased 100% on the street, which was a nice little quiet community to just have that one subdivision down at Riverstone. Northridge and T Street are the only entrances to that subdivision. My concern is, for this project, the noise that will be given to the neighbors is going to be huge if there's something right behind all my neighbors on T Street in the field. I heard one of the guys, say something about the roads were adequate, the intersection was adequate at Q and Fifth. I see people going too fast, too much traffic. On Fifth Street, there's a lot of traffic. People that are trying to get to the bus stops, they're crossing the street, and you have to slow down because they're doing it illegally. People getting off the buses and just traveling across to the apartments on the west side. That's a real concern. Crime. We have a Willamette Lane bike footpath that is behind us from T Street. And I live on a cul-de-sac off of T. And there's a lot of people that come through there. Lots of traffic, foot traffic, good people, but there are those that are very questionable. I've seen crime happening on the bike path as it is. If there's an apartment with people who have no vested interest by renting homes in a high-story complex, if they don't have anything vested money-wise into that neighborhood, they will not contribute. They'll bring other elements in, just like we already have.
Gloria, that's...
that's it?
That's,
well, thank you.
The commission certainly appreciates you coming in, okay. And this public testimony is incredibly important to the process.
Thank you.
Okay, Elaine and Daryl Graham.
Elaine Graham, 1498 Oksana Street, but we own property on T Street.
Okay.
And we're very concerned about the privacy and our rentals. And we just feel like, as everybody else has said, no rezoning. Duplexes are great, but not high density. It's just, it would be too congested. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am. Do I get your old address? 1498 Oksana.
Thanks. And our final testimony that we have we had any other requests, Brenda?
No.
Okay, final public testimony is from William Carpenter.
Could I ask Mr. Donovan a quick question? Could you enlarge that map with what you have on your screen? What I was hoping for was actually a map that the whole planning commission could see, because I've got one of these little magical devices.
It won't show on the TV.
It won't show on the TV.
Uh-uh.
Oh, man. Okay.
PowerPoint.
No, we don't have a poster up here, do we, with it?
Hmm.
Okay. Well, Could I recommend we get that for the city council when it has that hearing?
A large hard copy?
Yes, that you could use a pointer on it?
Certainly.
Great. And I hope my time hasn't started yet trying to arrange things.
Please state your name and address.
Certainly. William Carpenter, and I'm going to use my office address, 474 Willamette, Suite 303, Eugene, Oregon.
Okay.
And I'm also representing my wife in this instance, Pamela Keebles. So one thing that's conspicuously missing from the whole plan is these 12 pages to start with, which is the 1987 Q Street Refinement Plan, which the criteria has to meet if it's going to be approved by the Planning Commission, the City Council, and I'm kind of mystified by why that's missing. So what you got from me today was citations to actually the Q Street Planning Plan. And unfortunately, lawyers have a tendency to use exact language. And by the way, Mr. Satry's not a lawyer, he's a planner, just to be clear. And if you read through my materials, the other thing I want to mention is the applicant has the burden of proof. That means that he has to prove to you folks that all of this criteria has been met, because the Metro Plan and the Q Street Plan show this as low-density residential. And by the way, you as a Planning Commission are the protectors of the plans, and you really shouldn't ad hoc pick and choose well thought out refinement plans that your past predecessors used to kind of jerk things around a little bit, if I may use that term. That's a bit crude. But the problem is we don't have a net sum gain here. When we get whatever plan development comes in, and I should mention Mr. Satry's three-step process is kind of like saying the snowball at the top of the avalanche really didn't make any difference, because you folks are the first protector of the plan. And you should think about that when you decide whether or not the burden of proof's been met here. And from my letter, the criteria between LDR and the refinement plan is totally met at these lots. There's one of four things on the medium density residential that's met halfway, I think. I think part of it is it has to be on arterial, and that's not, but the other three are clearly not met. There's a real slip of language. The plan talks about a transit station, a transfer station for transit. EMX, you don't transfer to another bus at the EMX station. You do that at the Springfield station downtown. So that clearly is not a allowed requirement for MDR in this plan, as was stated in our 12-page Q Street Refinement Plan, 1987, approved by the Planning Commission. The other things to mention are the noise is really an issue here. So solar access is not a problem. Noise carries a lot farther than a shade of a tree. And also, as planning commissioners, you are the process caretakers to preserve the peace and quiet of existing neighborhoods. And actually, if you read my materials, the Metro Plan has something.
You've reached your 3 minutes. So
may I take some more time, Your Honor, if I'm the last one?
No, 3 minutes is our time.
I know. Well, I'm asking for another 3 minutes.
Where do we get this 3 minutes? Where's the?
It's just our standard procedure for public process, so everyone has the same amount of time to be able to address the planning.
But of course, we're going to allow a rebuttal from the applicant.
Absolutely.
To what I just said.
Greg, okay. I'm going to stop right here and pull the code section. So if you give me
a second. Okay. And I'm not even going to speak while she's looking.
If you'll hold for a second.
Certainly.
Says. there is specified in the development code at 5.2-135, and it provides that the planning commission, the presiding officer announces in advance the order of procedure that will be set, and that was provided in the agenda in specific format for tonight's public hearing, and it is in compliance with the quasi-judicial land use procedures required by state law.
Okay.
And I'm asking for a waiver for another 3 minutes.
And I would say no, we're moving forward.
Thank you.
Okay. That was the last request for public testimony that we have.
I would also request an additional 3 minutes.
That's at the discretion of the chair.
Okay. I would like to, I'd like to move into summation and on into rebuttal of the applicant. Certainly, we've heard the public testimony, and we certainly will take that into consideration as we move forward. So at this time, I think we'll move on into summation by staff and into rebuttal. And, you know, there's certainly an opportunity. We've had much information presented fairly late in the game. There may be an opportunity for the commission to extend the written record to provide opportunity to take in more information and allow us opportunity to digest the information that's been provided to us late in the process. But we'll take that into consideration as we move forward. For instance, we had testimony presented to us, written testimony presented at 4:02 p.m. tonight, and other testimony. So we'll certainly take that under consideration as we move in further into the process. Okay. So at this time, we are going to have summation by staff.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, not a great deal to add in addition to the public testimony, only that the Q Street refinement plan in its entirety was used in the preparation of the staff report in addressing what staff found to be the applicable criteria to the proposal before you tonight. So just a note on that. In the public testimony, the traffic was mentioned, and I guess I would just direct your attention to attachment 5 for more information. At this point, it's been provided to you that under the current zoning, 47 p.m. peak hours would be expected at full development in the scenario that is run in the TPR 12 analysis. The full development as proposed or allowed by our current code would result in 72 p.m. peak travel trips, and the difference between 47 and 72, as designed, scoped, analyzed by the applicant, and reviewed by our transportation planning engineer, certainly was found to be not an adverse impact at this level of review. The actual turn stacking and other traffic impacts would be reviewed if the development proposal that was submitted under site plan review warranted it by trip generation. There are mechanisms in the Springfield Development Code that address that, and if they were triggered, we would certainly do a traffic impact analysis and mitigation for those impacts. But the test at this level was the TPR analysis, and it was found not to be an adverse impact at this stage.
Okay. Okay, we have an opportunity for rebuttal from the applicant.
Good evening, Commissioner Rick Satry again. Thank you very much. Providing some rebuttal to the testimony in opposition that we heard a few minutes ago, I hit a few highlights. Such
such, again, legitimately, public comment is important to all of us. And concerns are important to all of us. But there's a process. It's commemorated in the adopted Springfield Development Code. The fact that there aren't any plans now is irrelevant, maybe important, and someday it will be important, but it's irrelevant to the applications and the criteria before you. Concerns about the type of housing, when folks say single level, apartments, duplexes. We need to know that HDR, MDR, LDR doesn't specify dwelling unit type or building type. It's all about density. And then along with that come a lot of standards with respect to site development. And if a multifamily project is proposed, then there's a whole other layer of the multifamily design standards that would be applicable. Such concerns as, you know, low rent, safety, crime, questionable people, speeding, jaywalking, renters, lots of kids, those are not applicable criteria. Again, legitimate concerns, change often in the human psyche for all of us. Change leads to the fear side of the ledger. It's normal for all of us, but those are not applicable criteria. It's been well documented that the applicable policies of the Q Street Refinement Plan, as noted in the staff report and as we shared with you tonight, page 14 of attachment 1, that this proposal is in large compliance with the Q Street Refinement Plan. It's in very large compliance with our Springfield Comprehensive Plan, the residential land use and housing element. And again, we do not want to underplay the fact that this is the first step in a long process for developing anything on that property should something happen someday. This is step one. There's another public process associated with these two particular applications, and there'll be a lot of public process, a lot of very detailed compliance with detailed standards in the site review process, which also affords an opportunity for notice and comment. So you have everything before you tonight, in spite of some late arrival of some letters this afternoon. You have everything before you tonight to make a recommendation. You're not making the decision. You're importantly, but you are forwarding a recommendation to the elected leaders of the city of Springfield. And so, as staff has recommended, obviously, naturally, the applicant is also recommending and encouraging you to move on both those motions before you this evening and move the process forward, because again, this is the first step in a long pathway. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We have an opportunity here. We had no verbal requests for an extension of the written record, and nor a request for a continuance of the public hearing. So at this time, it is up to...
I'm sorry, Chair. I would like to make a request.
Yes?
I second that.
I gave you a three-page document with an attachment about 7 o'clock tonight. I would request that the commission be given time to look through that and analyze it in detail, and thus I request not necessarily opening the written comments, but you postponing your decision until all of you had had a chance to review that information in detail.
Thank you. So I take that as a request to legal counsel.
So that could be interpreted one of two ways, I believe. That could be interpreted as a request to leave open the written record for additional submission of materials, which would accompany a opportunity for the applicant to rebut any additional material submitted into the record. The applicant has not expressed concern about additional time to respond to the materials that were submitted late, written materials submitted this evening. So I would not interpret the applicant as having requested an additional record extension for the applicant's benefit. That could also be interpreted as merely a request that the Planning Commission reconvene at a later date to deliberate, but not to keep the record open. Whether you choose to continue the matter in terms of your deliberation to another date is within your discretion, but not there's no legal requirement in the Oregon quasi-judicial statutes that would require you to give deference to that type of request. It would be entirely within your discretion.
And if I may, Chair, it was the second request I was making, not the first one. So it just you would postpone your deliberation to give you further time to review the material.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so so at this time, certainly I would entertain a motion to close or continue the public hearing based on the information that's been presented.
I move to continue the public hearing.
Okay, do I hear a second to that?
I think I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor to continue the public hearing and a second to that. Understanding, commissioners, that continuing the public hearing allows further testimony at a later date. Closing the public hearing allows us to deliberate and postpone our decision to a subsequent date. Okay.
Clarification.
Mm-hmm.
May we still ask questions to the staff if we only hold the written record of it?
Absolutely.
But may I amend my motion? Change my motion?
You may withdraw your motion.
I withdraw my motion. I move to hold the written record of it.
You need to first decide if you're going to leave open or close the public hearing before you decide what to do with the record.
Public hearing first.
Okay.
So my question again is to the commission. I would entertain a motion to either close the public hearing or continue the public hearing.
Chair, I move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion on the floor to close the public hearing. A second by Commissioner Cuevla. All those in favor of closing the public hearing at this time, which does not preclude further deliberations or movement of a decision to a later date, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The public hearing is closed. Okay. The question is now before us to close the written record or extend the written record. Understanding the request from the public, from our request coming forward, was not to leave the written record open for 7 days, which can be requested, but for us to move the deliberation back to allow us time to review the written record prior to making a decision. All right. So the question before the commission is whether we leave the written record open or whether we close the written record at this time. So I would entertain a motion to either leave the written record open or close the written record.
I have a question.
Okay.
The question is this documentation from Mr. Carpenter, is it, if we close the record, will this documentation be included in the record,
this
or is that only for the continuance?
What's been submitted to the Planning Commission tonight, including documents submitted tonight to be placed into the record, are in the record.
They are in the
okay,
record.
Thank you.
Everything that's been submitted.
Okay.
In,
because of the late date, I'm sure.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Up until we close the record, it can be submitted. Okay? So the motion before us.
Chair, I move to close the written record.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to close the written record. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Written record is closed. Okay, now it's time for the Planning Commission discussion and possible questions that we might have of staff. Questions?
I have a question for staff.
Yes.
Can you give us staff's definition of transit transfer station? It was brought to us by the Mr. Carpenter.
I'm not, Commissioner, I'm not sure if they're going to look up the page that he cited. Any mention of the transit service that's included in this document would have been relevant to the transit service that was operational at the time this document was adopted. And I'm, although...
Which was 30 years ago.
Yeah. LTD changed their delivery system, including what used to be... It wasn't MX in the past, it was something else, and then it was changed to MX. But after the adoption of Transplant in 2001, so and that's not the only thing that's changed. That's 1987. A number of other things have changed. And without us looking at everything that's in here, it's hard to say unequivocally that that things haven't been affected by these other changes. I mean, we know that the courts make decisions that have implications on the way we do business, and we can't ignore what the courts have decided. No matter what our plans or our code say, those court decisions replace or supersede any of the provisions of our plan or code that are in conflict with that court decision. The legislature enacts new laws. It used to be every 2 years, now it's every 6 or 8 months. And those new laws could have an effect on our existing laws, and in some cases do. In some circumstances, we're actually able to make the reciprocal or needed changes to our plans and codes in a timely manner. That is, that by the effective date of those new state laws. In other cases, we're not, and we've been advised by council in the past, not this council, but other councils, that state law automatically supersedes local law if there's a conflict. And the laws for that same purpose. So, right now, tonight, I wouldn't feel comfortable answering your question.
Understood.
But obviously there have been changes since 1987, and I'm not aware that we've made any updates to this refinement plan since it was adopted, other than an occasional, possible occasional plan diagram.
I would just note that neither the plan text nor the development code contains a definition for transit transfer station as a defined term, the way that other terms may have a specific definition.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Your question. Other questions of staff? Ms. Dunn? Okay. Well, I would suggest, my opinion as a planning commission, serving on the planning commission, that we have had public testimony tonight. We have had late written testimony tonight provided to us. I think, in my personal opinion, as a planning commissioner, it is incumbent upon me to review that information thoroughly prior to making a decision on this issue. And I would feel comfortable moving our deliberation and decision-making process to our subsequent meeting in April. Yes.
April 18th.
April 18th, which would still provide and keep us on track should we choose to forward this to the city council, would still keep us on track, I believe, staff, to be able to move this forward should we choose to move it forward to the council on May 15th. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's we would have adequate time to also review the submittals and...
And have staff response to this.
And answer your questions
and
regarding those submittals. And it would leave us adequate time for the preparation of the council packet with your recommendation.
Okay.
That is something that we can do then.
Absolutely.
To be clear, you would be delaying your deliberation on the record that's been placed before you. So if somebody mails a comment to City Hall tomorrow that's received that's relevant to this application, it would be included in what goes to City Council. It would not come to you for the basis as the basis of your decision
right.
because you have closed
because
the record.
Because we've closed the record. Okay. All right. So we should act on a motion should we take action based on a motion to move our deliberation to our subsequent meeting on April, or can that just be a consensus decision?
I think that could be a consensus decision,
okay.
But...
Do we have consensus among the commission that we've received late information and that we need to review that information prior to our deliberations?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so, yes.
Just one question, schedule-wise, with April 18th, you will work
April 18th works. You're going to be in for a CCI and a work session. So public hearing, well, not public hearing, but you can do deliberation at 7 o'clock.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we can do that. All right. So I think we have consensus among the commission that we will... review the information that's been provided to us, and we will deliberate at our subsequent meeting.
So April 18th.
April 18th.
At 7.
At 7 p.m. Okay, for the public, April 18th at 7 p.m.
For the motion. For deliberation.
Okay. All right. So at this time, let's see, the public hearing has been closed. We're through that process, and we're on to reports of council action.
Could I interrupt for just a second? I was hoping to ask some requests of staff in regard to the application.
Okay.
They're not actually questions. They're more of... looking for some background, one of which,
absolutely.
Okay, one of which would be a deeper examination of, I believe it is finding number 37, which was to certain areas, Article C. Areas that could serve as buffer between low density residential and community commercial. And my question is, was that intended as a development buffer so that, or is that intended as an infill buffer? I think the difference between the two is very important, that you have existing single family residential running against community commercial now. Where should the buffer be applied? Is the buffer intended to impact? Is it intended to impact which properties?
I think, Commissioner, starting at face value, areas that could serve as a buffer between LDR and community commercial, in evidence on the map, standard planning procedure design is to have less intensive uses abut one another. So from the community commercial, which is the most intensive and permissive community or commercial zoning district we have, I would read that intent as having areas that could serve as a zoning designation. Since we are talking in the prelim cited in condition 37 about
plan designation and redesignations, I believe, we're talking about zoning districts that would then act as a buffer. So in reverse order, you would have a commercial zoning district, you would have a high-density residential, then medium-density residential, and then LDR. Again, similar to what's right across the street here, standard planning theory, I think, at the time.
Yeah, my question is that, you know, if you look on it as a development where you're building commercial and then building HDR and LDR, or HDR and MDR, and then LDR, that's a different situation as you're building outward than it is in infill. And I was just wondering whether those two, whether that had ever been addressed in the past before.
I can provide some of the language from that criteria that may be insightful. Ultimately, I think how you apply that is up to your read on the policies. It says that for low density residential, medium density residential, and high density residential, it says that plan designation shall be applied where the following circumstances predominate, which could be read to imply where the existing circumstances predominate, which would potentially then go towards both infill and new development, although you could make a decision as a policymaker that you will interpret that policy in a particular way.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, all right. We'll move on then. Okay, reports of council action. Have we attended any council meetings?
There was supposed to be a city council meeting on the 27th that was canceled because of the spring break. So.
Okay. All right. Great. Upcoming planning commission meetings, committee assignments. I think we've already discussed that. Any other business from the planning manager or others?
Nothing.
Okay. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.